Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Robert Aberle. Try to get a hold of Bob. We shall connect with him shortly. He's a professor of humanities and philosophy at Diablo Valley College in California. He's written four books. They include Democracy Gone. Don't know if it's ever really been around, but he's got Democracy Gone, Anatomy of a Deception. We've talked about that book before on the program. It's about the Iraq 2003 invasion, the occupation, and what always happens after one of America's wars, preparing for the next deception. It's one after another. They never end. When we get Bob on, we'll talk about the issues on his mind. It's been a while since Bob has been on last. Hopefully we'll connect with him very shortly and easily. I continue what I do every day. I write a considerable amount, to say the least. I mentioned yesterday, I'll mention it just briefly for people, for listeners who hadn't listened to yesterday's program or haven't done it yet. My goodness, don't miss it. Absolutely don't miss it. It was a stellar program with a stellar guest, and Bob is another marvelous guest. Hopefully every program turns out much the same way. It's why I call this program a truth hour. It really is a truth hour. I mentioned that the sequel to my Wall Street book came out earlier in the week. It's called Banker Occupation, Waging Financial War on Humanity. It's available. Anybody can get it. I'm waiting for my copies to arrive. Haven't gotten them yet. I've got the material online, but I don't have the hard copy yet, and I always look forward to getting that. So do check out the book. My webmaster friend will post information about it on my blog site as soon as she's able to do it. My latest book is top posted below my bio, How Wall Street Fleeces America. And the newest one will be the one on top when we get it posted. But anybody can find it online. Banker Occupation and my name, that should bring it up to Amazon or anybody who might list it. Anyway, let's talk about issues. Certainly what's going on economically concerns me greatly. I've written a number of times about the so-called fiscal cliff. I'll have another article that I've been working on. I've gotten sidetracked on the article. I have an article half done on the fiscal cliff betrayal and hoax that's coming up and what it is and what it means and what's going on. I've covered some of that ground before. It needs to be brought up to date, and that's what I want to do. I get sidetracked when other things of importance happens, like Israel wages war for 8 days on Gaza, or the UN has a vote and overwhelmingly upgrades Palestine status, and Israel reacts by violating the terms, the ceasefire terms it agreed to. In an article I was working on before I came on here, I'll finish it later this afternoon, I quoted a Palestinian human rights organization saying, once the 8-day Gaza war called Pillar of Cloud ended, began on the 14th of November, ran 8 days, when it ended, both sides agreed to what they called Memorandum of Understanding terms. Well, Hamas and the other resistance groups unilaterally have observed them. In less than 24 hours, Israel violated them. They've done it every single day. And that's basically what Al-Haq had to say, the human rights organization. I quote from their article. They give examples. I covered some of the examples they gave in other articles, so I didn't repeat them. But it's attacking children, it's shooting them. Sometimes literally, and I don't exaggerate, sometimes literally shooting them for target practice. I don't exaggerate. It happens. You've got these young kids, these Israeli soldiers, stationed on the border or in watchtowers or wherever they're positioned. And some kid gets a little bit too close to the border on their own territory, maybe within 200 or 300 meters. And a commander, I believe, has to give an order. I'm not certain if the soldiers do this on their own. Maybe they do sometimes. But I'm guessing most often a commander gives an order. And they say, open fire. And they target these kids, and they either wound them or they kill them. Does anything happen? No. Is accountability ever possible virtually never. From the Cass-led war, there were only a few Israeli soldiers held to account, 2008, 2009, 23 days, over 1,400 Palestinians killed, over 5,000 hurt, vast destruction. Only a handful of Israeli soldiers were held accountable. For what? If you can believe this, I'm trying to remember because it's been so long since I've written about it. I believe two of them were either charged with and or convicted for credit card fraud. Credit card fraud? Committing cold-blooded murder and you're convicted for credit card fraud? Again, it's been so long, I don't remember the connection between how anybody came up with a charge like that and what these guys actually did. They used Palestinians for human shields. They killed children. They killed women. They killed infants. They ransacked homes. They did all kinds of, committed all kinds of horrendous crimes. There were a couple of legitimate commissions that were put together. They really documented them very, very intensively. And there's no question that grievous war crimes and crimes against humanity were committed. Nobody was held to account for the most serious crimes. And a couple of other soldiers were held to account for some minor things, and their punishment was nothing more than a slap on the wrist. No commander, virtually never does an Israeli commander answer for ordering soldiers to commit these crimes. It's almost unheard of for anything like that to happen to an Israeli commander. When something is too egregious to ignore, once in a while they hang a couple of low-level soldiers out to dry, but not the way they deserve to be. Slap on the wrist. Same thing with America. We've discussed on this program before. The rules of engagement in Iraq, they're the same rules of engagement in all U.S. wars. They're the same. They don't change. And the rules of engagement, I remember quoting what they were said about Iraq. And the language, I don't remember it exactly verbatim, but this is pretty close. Kill all military-aged Iraqi men on sight. No definition of what that means. What's a military-aged Iraqi man, or Afghan man, or Libyan man, or Syrian man, or any other man anywhere? If anybody, a soldier, gets in his sights and pulls the trigger, that's the definition. Violates international law, violates U.S. statute law, violates constitutional law. There's something in the Constitution called the Supremacy Clause. I think it's in Article 1, Section 8. Supremacy Clause says that all international treaties, conventions, meaning all international law that America is signed on to, like the UN Charter, like the four Geneva Conventions, like the Hague Convention, like many others that America is a signatory to, it means that those treaties and conventions are automatically U.S. law. That makes them inviolable. Violation is a crime. Anybody committing a crime is supposed to be punished. Is anybody punished for doing these things? They get medals. They're not punished. They literally get medals. The more of the enemy you kill, the greater the chance you'll get another medal, or maybe a higher level one, or maybe the highest level one. That's the way imperial powers run things. That's for sure the way America is run. For sure the way Israel is run. They commit cold-blooded murder with impunity. I sure don't make this stuff up. I think listeners to this program understand it very, very well. My feeling to everyone listening is spread the word and tell others, because there are still too many who don't realize just how bad things are. And these policies are the chickens that come home to roost and harm us. That's what really matters. If people ever realize that these policies harm us, maybe they'd get mad enough to do something about changing them. I think we got Bob on. Bob, are we connected?
Yes, we are, Steve.
Welcome.
Thank you. My mistake. I sent the wrong number. We got a new phone number, and I actually typed it wrong. So.
Okay.
And when no phone call came, I thought, well, wait a minute. This isn't right. I mean, usually, you know, everybody's right up front there. And
we were.
Ready. But it never came, so I finally called in and said, I got the wrong phone number. I sent you the right number, but it got there too late, I'm sure, so.
Do me a favor, when the program is over, send it to me again, because I typed in the number that you sent me. I want to be certain that I typed in the right number. So when we're off the air at the end of the program, send it to me again. I'll double check.
Yeah.
So we can avoid this kind of a problem.
Yeah, sure. My apologies. That was my mistake.
You know what's on my mind? That because of the time differential, that maybe there's a misunderstanding on exactly when we're going on air.
Oh, no, that was no problem, but it was, I think I just sent the typo to you originally, and that was my mistake, so apologies. I think at least we got it squared away.
We only missed a few minutes, and I played guest and host for about 10 minutes. Anyway, let me let you jump in. Talk about the things most on your mind, Bob. I've just kind of been rambling on a little bit foreign policy. I mentioned the fiscal cliff, but what are the things that are most on your mind now?
Well, the fiscal cliff is quite a ruse in itself, actually, especially when the media just grabs onto that very well-planned phrase and just trumpets it out over and over again. The fiscal cliff is really, actually, since I wasn't listening, have you been talking about that specifically, where that came from and all of that?
I mentioned it, but I sidetracked myself and got into a couple of other things and didn't come back to it. I merely called it a deception and a hoax.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's what it is, really. I mean, the real fiscal cliff is the notion that there's a simultaneous expiration of tax cuts and the imposition of spending cuts. And so they call it a fiscal cliff because they're trying to make it, particularly through the media, they're trying to make it sound like a great emergency that needs to be taken care of immediately, even though when people in the United States learn what this is, they're very much opposed to all of these cuts, the sweeping cuts that will be coming to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. They're opposed to it, but in order to get through that opposition, they just propagandize it by calling it a fiscal cliff, and then they can push through this very unpopular stuff. And what's really interesting about this whole fiscal cliff thing is that they pushed all this stuff off till after the election. This could have been talked about, discussed, put up for discussion with the populace and with the political leaders long prior to this. But deficit reduction was not a part of the agenda. Cutting for defense was not part of the agenda, although the fiscal cliff is supposed to include some of that. But there wasn't anything done about that. But now, the way I understand it, Steve, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the fiscal cliff issue basically means that there are seven different areas that are going to be economically affected. The expiration of the Bush tax cuts, which is in the neighborhood of like $200 billion. But then the second thing, across-the-board spending cuts, which is far more, $1 trillion over the next year, between domestic and military programs, allegedly. Payroll tax cut deduction, or what Obama's called the payroll tax holiday, that would expire as well, and that's what employers don't want to have happen. Expiration of extended unemployment benefits, that would expire. The alternative minimum tax expires. That's not even all seven, but that's as many if I can remember off the top of my head. Medicare reimbursement, I think, is another one. Those are all things that are really about social programs and about the people. That's what Obama and the media don't want people to take away. And so you get media outlets like NPR who continue just to say, fiscal cliff, emergency, and they trump up this hysteria. And then it turns out that when they go through this, it's just legislation or a program that's in favor of the wealthy elite and not the people.
Bob, that is so true. I think you cover the ground on the issues that are coming up at the end of the year. I'll bet listeners forget something that happened last year. There was a super committee formed. I forget the number, but House members, Senate members are equally split, Republicans and Democrats, and they agreed to sequester $1.2 trillion, but they couldn't agree on what to cut, so they kicked the can down the road and got it past the election. When, you know, the election is over, we got 2 years to monkey with this stuff, and they brought it up again. So what should have been done a year ago, they'll do by the end of the year this year. But they probably won't get it done, Bob. They'll probably do it in baby steps. They will come up with what they call a continuing resolution, probably kick a lot of this stuff into the new year, and at some point do some things but delay other things. We'll have to wait to see the way they maneuver it. But, you know, they never agree on a budget every year. So they delay with these continuing resolutions where they appropriate a certain amount of money to keep the government running so things don't shut down, and then they resolve these things one way or another. And they play chicken with each other right up to the 11th hour. So there'll be nothing resolved until, you know, we'll get up to Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or something like that, and then they'll do something. It won't be very much, probably, and they'll have a continuing resolution. And but the name of the game is what you said. I put it this way also, Bob. U.S. policy, U.S. imperial policy demands one war after another. They want to free up money to wage limitless, permanent imperial wars. They want to be able to hand out trillions of dollars to corporate favorites, the bankers and all the others. You've got the lavish subsidies that never get reported in the mainstream. We're talking about hundreds of billions of tax dollars handed out every year to corporations that make a lot of money, and they also have lots of loopholes in the tax code, so they can literally get away not only with paying little or no taxes, but companies like General Electric can have a year where they make billions of dollars in profit, and they actually get a tax rebate. That's how corrupted the tax code is. But if any of you, I, or anybody listening to this program try to get away with some of those shenanigans, we would be sitting in striped suits behind bars, Bob. So the idea is whack ordinary people, take the benefits away from them, especially the big-ticket items, Social Security privatize it, Medicare privatize it, Medicare get rid of it, food stamps get rid of it, other things get rid of it. Do it incrementally like boiling a frog, because you can't just wipe it off the board with one fell swoop. So you do it so people only get it in baby strokes, death by a thousand cuts, and the eventual end game is get rid of social America entirely, destroy it, return America to 19th century harshness, do everything for the corporate big boys, wage wars without end. That's the dirty game. And they package it in two deceptive terms, fiscal cliff and grand bargain. Well, you can call it anything you want, but that's what the way you described it, Bob, and I think the way I just described it.
And the thing that I find disturbing, Steve, is that this isn't just the United States doing this, although we've been talking specifically about what Obama's been up to, but this is happening worldwide. I mean, we all know what's going on in Greece and Spain in particular, but also this past week and even the week before, there was a lot of unrest in Mexico because the newly elected president there, Enrique Peña Nieto, took his alleged mandate from his party, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, and then in behind closed doors implemented his own austerity package, which says exactly the same thing that Obama is doing, exactly the same thing that's going on in Greece, and he released it, calling it the Pact for Mexico. And then the result from that is that the people, the teachers, the workers, the students, the peasants, the farmers, the laborers, they all understood what was going on, and they didn't hesitate to protest in a heartbeat. And there were tens of thousands of people that have been protesting for the last 2 weeks. This is something else our media is not covering at all. But in Mexico City itself, it's overwhelmed in downtown with protests going on. The Yo Soy 132 movement is what they're calling it. But even from Oaxaca to Mexico City, lots of protests on this. And then what does Obama do? He meets with Nieto and says, I agree with his plan. I agree with these market reforms. So what Nieto is doing is opening up the energy sectors and the mineral sectors of Mexico to foreign firms. He's privatizing education. He's deregulating the financial sector, while at the same time cutting out social benefits of food and medicine. So it's the same thing in Mexico that's going on in the United States, that's going on in Greece. This is a worldwide war of the elite against the people. And the only people that so far have responded to it are the people in Mexico, Greece, and Spain. They're the hardest hit right now, but it's coming our way. And we're not paying attention to it. If you look at the sales that have occurred for these corporations, the sales from Kohl's to Target to Macy's, they're all down. All the sales are down. corporate profits are still really high because what they're doing is cutting workers' wages, cutting their benefits, reducing their working conditions, and pocketing the difference. You know of the hostess strike that occurred that did exactly that same thing, where the judge actually allowed something like $1.75 million in pay raises to the executive of Hostess while saying under bankruptcy rules, the laborers, the wage earners, had to take more pay cuts and more benefit cuts. You're probably also aware of Papa John, the Papa John's Pizza, establishing this notion of, well, if I have to pay for health care for my workers, I don't want to do that because I'll have to raise my pizzas by a dime a pizza. So instead of doing that, I'm going to cut everybody that works for me down to 30 hours or below. That way I don't have to pay for insurance. It's a war. And even in the midst of this war, here comes a study from the Congressional Research Service, which is nonpartisan, saying that there is no evidence that any of these austerity measures leads to any improved economic growth. It rather leads to disparity of income and inequality and too many disparities to keep society together. So you got that nonpartisan research coming out. Nobody covers it. You got protests going on in Mexico. It's not really being covered that much. And everybody else saying, okay, well, what's on TV tonight? We've got a real perfect storm developing here.
Bob, once in a blue moon, I write about Mexico. And a year ago, I believe, almost to the very day, virtually a year ago today, I do very little travel, but I was in Mexico City. I was invited down, and it was a glorious event I was proud of. And I had a visit, the famous Zocalo, the big square that's right near the presidential palace. And I remember writing about the huge, massive, million-person protests that filled that huge square in 2006 after Calderon, the previous president, wasn't elected. He was installed by fraud. Nieto was installed by fraud. In an older article, Bob, it's been a good while, but I said something to the effect that Mexico invented fraudulent elections. I mean, they've gone on in Mexico for eons. I wrote about Nieto. I wrote about Calderon in 2006. I wrote about Vicente Fox, about other previous presidents. And one time I wrote about the Mexican Revolution and how they get rid of the people who really want change. And they were heroes of Mexico, but they don't last very long. They get rid of them. They kill them. And the dirty system goes on and on. And when it comes to elections, the notion that Mexico is a democracy is a very, very cruel joke. There's no democracy whatever in Mexico. The difference between there and here, Bob, is angry Mexicans get out in the street and they protest. They do something about it. They haven't managed to get change, but every now and then, I mean, they had a revolution 100 years or so ago, and maybe something's percolating below the surface where it'll break out in another revolution. They've had it because of these kinds of shenanigans. America never had a legitimate revolution. The so-called Revolutionary War was elitist in America versus elitist in Britain. I don't call that a revolution. And when it ended, basically, the only thing that changed, everything stayed the same under new management, but virtually things stayed the same. Instead of a king, we had a coronated president who ran unopposed and served 8 years, and the powers that be wanted to make George Washington a king. He had sense enough to think it was a bad idea and wanted no part of it. But we might have ended up with a king and had the same system as Britain. So the system here is fraudulent, and Mexico is fraudulent. It's hard to find places where they really have legitimate democratic processes, Bob. They talk about it, but they sure don't practice it.
They don't practice it, but and it's been that way from the beginning. I mean, just with the institution of the Electoral College to make sure that the populace didn't get too powerful. I mean, that should say everything right there. But you're not going to have any type of democratic reforms, truly democratic reforms, when you've got two things really going on. You've got the people at large being depoliticized in the United States, I'm speaking of specifically, when individualism reigns and emotionalism reigns, then all I really have to do is make sure that my desires are met in a basic manner and I'm good. So it's a depoliticization that comes about from this notion of individuals and individualism and all of that. But the other thing that really concerns me from the other end of that is that these alleged trade union leaders are all on board with Obama and with corporate America to make these austerity measures. And yet people continue to put their faith in their union leaders that are involved in union, although that's beginning to change now. And you're never going to have any groundswell movement when people put their faith in their leaders. And that's exactly what democracy should not be, where I just make a leader and say, okay, go do my bidding for me, and I'll go about my own business. But the union leaders that met with Obama, let me put it this way, right after Obama's election, within 10 days after his reelection, he met with the CEOs of 12 major corporations, then turned right around, walked from there into a meeting of trade union presidents and representatives, so that you had these major unions whom Obama was in cahoots with, along with corporate America, from the SEIU to the NEA, the National Education Association, to the Center for American Progress. Even MoveOn.org was present at this union meeting. And they all walked out of the meeting with the same message, both the corporate executives and the union people: deficit reduction. We need deficit reduction. Raise the eligibility age for Medicare. Cut health benefits for the elderly and poor. The union representatives said the same thing that the corporate representatives did. So the only way that you're going to have a democratic movement in America is to overcome the depoliticization by putting labor leaders and political leaders in place and letting them do your bidding. Take that power back. Do it yourself. Pull together with other people. Organize together, unify together, forget about these leaders in these organizations because they've done nothing but enhance their own prestige and line their own pockets. There's abundant evidence for that. So let's make this democratic. Let's pull together and start from the bottom and start pushing up.
Well, Bob, I agree with you entirely. I wrote at great length in winter 2011 how the unions in Wisconsin sold out the public workers. They protested for weeks so heroically. It was one of the great open labor struggles in America in modern times. For weeks, for over a month, they took over the state capitol in Madison. They really held their ground. They were heroic workers, teachers, healthcare workers, all kinds of public workers. And the labor bosses sold them out. Sold them out. It happens again and again. It goes back the original, not the original, but in modern times, in post-World War II times, when labor was strong coming out of World War II, and in the 1950s, a high percentage of the U.S. Working force was unionized, and it began going down. And the great shot across the bow happened during the Reagan years, early in his administration, where he fired the PATCO workers, the air traffic controllers. And Lane Kirkland, head of the AFL-CIO, was the guy who made this possible. It wouldn't have happened if Kirkland didn't go along with this, but he went along with firing his own rank-and-file workers that deserved a lot better than they were getting, and that was a shot across the bow that literally opened warfare against organized labor in America, and it's been all downhill ever since. I think private workers, I think unionization was somewhere on the order of 35%, and today it's on the order of less than 10%. And the great war now is against public workers, because most of the unionized workers in America are public, and the union bosses complicit with the government bosses, and the corporate bosses get mixed up in this as well, because if you get rid of the rights of all kinds of workers, it goes right to their bottom line, and they're in open warfare against rank and file working people in America. They want all their rights taken away. They want unionism destroyed, and the union bosses go along with this. You know, they want fake unions, boss, Bob. They want fake union. You know, just have the front of unionization with no rights behind them. Better to have no unions than to have those kinds of unions. But the union bosses share the most guilt. Let's take a quick break, Bob, but we'll come right back. Welcome back. On with Bob Abele. Talking about a lot of domestic things, and they're very important. And, of course, this fiscal cliff, Bob, as you mentioned, and I'm glad we spent a lot of time on that, and corrupt union bosses, because this is big stuff. And what's coming out of this, I'll just sum it up again, and then you can jump in with any more of your comments or another topics that you want to get into. But the name of the game, literally, I mean literally, is destroy social America, turn America back to the 19th century, maybe before that, really turn it back to the dark ages, and literally free up the wealth of the nation to hand to the rich people who already have too much, and to the corporate favorites, and the warmongers, the war makers, the war profiteers. That's the name of the game. And they disguise it by saying we have a fiscal problem, we have to cut the budget. Well, America can print all the money it wants, and it can also get its house in order if it acts responsibly. At least three-quarters of the defense budget, it's not a defense budget, it's a war budget, at least three-quarters of it should be whacked and gotten rid of. All the overseas bases should be closed. Most of the U.S. ones should be closed. The last time America had an enemy, Bob, I've said this many times and I've written it, was the day before Japan surrendered on the mid-August of 1945, and they wanted to surrender months earlier, but Truman wanted no part of it because the generals wanted to try out their new toys and scare the Soviets. So they dropped a couple of bombs that were done gratuitously, killed enormous numbers of Japanese. The war was over months before that, and again, the Japanese wanted to surrender. They never wanted the war in the first place. It's amazing when you get the truth about these things, it's so different than the official lie, the big lie.
It's a lot different than the big lie, and I'm going to commit the sin that you should never commit, and that is to bring in Nazi Germany here. I thought that's what you were going to talk about, the United States' enemy in Nazi Germany, but if you think about all of the various attacks that the United States has done with its military, not just on Germany, but actually since 1890, somewhere in there, the number of countries that the United States has militarily attacked since the late 1800s, let's say, is somewhere around 130 countries. Each and every time, it was the United States that provoked it, and it wasn't a country that attacked the United States. There was some type of reason that was given, some type of propaganda in order to do this attack, all for the sake of power and dominance in the world. It had nothing to do with beating back any enemy, and that's the point that you initially made. And in regard to how this works out politically for the United States, I've got another thesis here that, and I don't know how well I could support this because I'm not an economist, but it looks to me at this point like what's going on with the war machine and taking over resources all around the world and controlling other governments around the world so that the elite can have more power and more wealth. It looks to me like it domestically, the way that's going to play out, if these people have their way, is that the income tax will be incrementally reduced more and more and more for everybody, while at the same time reducing the size of the government, particularly as it helps the people. The New Deal and all that, that's all dead by now. It's just a matter of when it just peters out. So they break down the New Deal program, they break down the size of the government in favor of breaking down the income tax that supports that government. The end result, I think, that John Boehner and Paul Ryan and others are pushing for is a consumption tax, so that the income taxes are reduced to minimal levels, but everybody pays the exact same very high consumption tax on everything that they buy that they consume, so that you can fund what government programs are left. And there's not going to be many left because a consumption tax can't be that high to fulfill those programs. So you reduce the programs, you reduce government and its power, and then you end up with a complete tax burden on the middle class and the lower class because they've got to pay much higher percentage of their income for what they consume, while the wealthy people who are able to continue to amass their wealth, paying the same amount of tax for their consumption, but virtually no income tax, are benefiting quite handsomely. The end result from that is totalitarianism, what people call fascism. And you've got complete corporate control mixed in with the government and the wealthy living their own life, which is very disparate from everybody else. And Julian Assange was on Democracy Now! Not long ago, last week, I think, and he quoted William Binney, former national security advisor, who said that we are now in a position of turnkey totalitarianism. In other words, all of the structure has been put into place, and all it's going to take is for somebody to turn the key, and Americans are going to wake up one day and find that they don't have anything left, not even a government that supports them. That's just my thesis. I think that's where we're headed.
Well, I agree with you, Bob. I absolutely agree. And I remember so vividly writing to the lead up to what happened on New Year's Eve last year, the fact that Obama signed into law two provisions of the annual National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, that authorized the U.S. military to arrest and put in military dungeons U.S. citizens, whether they're in the U.S. or anywhere in the world, and they could stay there uncharged, untried for the rest of their lives, even if they did nothing. And then he compounded that crime this year with coming up with a kill list, and then the language got, the program, I think, got intensified, and they came up with the language disposition matrix. I don't know where they come up with these terms. Disposition matrix. You know, unless somebody defines it, you don't know what the heck they're talking about. Well, I guess disposition means getting rid of somebody. Disposition matrix. Let's call it what it is. Targeted cold-blooded murder, where Obama, on his own say alone, his own say, can say, I want so-and-so killed. And John Brennan, his counterintelligence head, I call him Obama's maestro of murder, which is what he is. They get together, have a weekly meeting, as I understand it, a weekly meeting where they discuss targets and they agree on who they're going to kill. I don't think Murder Incorporated, you know, the mafia's Murder Incorporated, ever operated this way. You know, they pick out an enemy here, an enemy there. I mean, these guys in Washington, I mean, they're picking out, who knows how many people they're picking out. I mean, these drones that attack people, and most of the ones that are killed have nothing to do with supposed people that are being targeted. It's mostly innocent civilians, you know, women, children, men. They kill wedding parties. They kill people while they're praying. They kill farmers in their fields. They have nothing to do with committing any kind of violence. I mean, this stuff goes on, and then you've got Obama lock them up and throw the key away policies, indefinite detentions, targeting innocent people, his kill list. I wonder how many people who don't listen to programs like this, Bob, have any idea that this stuff is going on. I'm sure they don't.
They don't. I have mentioned these things in my classes, and my students, even the adult students that are there, had no clue that this was going on because they're getting their news from the mainstream news media. So they've all become very interested and say, where do we get more information on this? So I give them alternative resources to get information so that they can see what's going on. They don't know. And you're right. You actually said it in one of your articles, I don't know, probably a couple of weeks ago, Obama's involvement in state murder and all that. And you had mentioned it in your article that you have to go through this process. If someone is going to be accused of being guilty or even treasonous, you've got a process in place. You need trials. You need legal representation. You need due process, habeas corpus rights. Those things are all gone under Obama. He just takes the power to say, if I make this determination that you're a threat to us, you're gone. You're dead. Or we're going to do with you what we did with Adnan Abdul Latif, who died back in September, the guy who was rounded up at Yemen from kind of a dragnet operation that Obama went through and just picked up anybody and put him in Guantanamo Bay. He was there for 10 years. Actually, that was Bush, I guess, that did that. He's been there for 10 years. And finally, Obama decided that he was a threat because he kept going through habeas corpus petitions and federal judges going through this and that. And he was a real pain in the rear to them. He was never convicted of any crime. In fact, if you look at the documents from WikiLeaks, they knew all along that this guy was innocent. They just picked him up on a suspicion, kept him in Guantanamo. He made a lot of noise, and suddenly he turns up dead under very suspicious circumstances, by the way. So that's been buried in the media as well. So here you've got a commander-in-chief who has decided not only that he can engage in assassinations, but he can arrest anybody he wants, put them away, not charge them with anything, let them rot, and if they cause too much of a problem, they'll turn up dead. Now, I don't know what you would call that, but you certainly can't call it a Democratic president who's doing that. But try talking to an Obama supporter about that and see what kind of response he gets. So the people get the government they deserve. And if people are saying Obama's our hero, well, what's left of any type of democracy then?
Well, of course, democracy is a very cruel joke in America, Bob. This morning I exchanged a few emails, and I think they're still coming from a contractor in Afghanistan who I think he said before he took on contractor, before he decided to cash in as a contractor, he was an intelligence operative. I think he may have mentioned CIA, and I mentioned to him in a couple of emails some of the stuff going on, and he literally acted like he knows nothing about this stuff. You know, things that you and I are talking about. I mentioned all the millions of people that America's has been responsible for killing since the 1991 Iraq War, including the sanctions that took maybe 1.5 million Iraqi lives, most of them young children. And this is all in the public record. I mean, and the UN has done reports on this stuff. I can remember, it's been a long time, but I remember quoting from UN reports about the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children who were killed by these sanctions that literally were slow death by malnutrition, by virtual starvation, by the inability to get medications for medical illnesses or other kinds of medical help. I mean, this literally was slow process murder, slow motion genocide, and this, I mean, this stuff happened, and then in the wars and the continuation of what goes on during the occupations. And we're talking about millions of people whose deaths are the responsibility of American policy. And this goes on and on and on. And you could go back to the Korean War and the Southeast Asian War. And between them, 6 or 7 million Asians were killed. And this is in the record. And of course, in World War II, my God, the millions that perished in that war, and Americans had plenty of blood on their own hands. There was gratuitous blood. This goes on in all the wars. You know, we could go back to the beginning of the Republic and document the millions of lives that were lost. But this is U.S. policy down through the ages. And people who know better, intelligent people who have responsible positions and get responsible jobs and have a brain in their heads, they don't know any of this stuff. And when you tell it to them, they think you're crazy.
They do. They think you're crazy. And then they start calling you subversive and things like that because they don't know and they don't want to know. It's just kind of, I'm going to close my eyes and keep going, nah, don't tell me. But what you're talking about is what the United States is doing in Syria right now. Just this past Wednesday, the United Nations announced that they're not able to feed the refugees in Syria, which number about 1.5 million people. They can't do it anymore because the resulting attacks that have come from what the group the United States is supporting, what they're calling the insurgents, stopping UN vehicles from delivering supplies to the people. Now, the United States knows that. That's been in the news. Obviously, if it's in the mainstream news even, that Obama knows that, but it doesn't matter. It's just a constant ongoing thing of we want this guy out because he doesn't do what we tell him. And so we'll line up with Al-Qaeda. That's okay. We'll starve the 1.5 million refugees. That's okay, as long as we've got the military power. So instead of sending food, the very next day, what did Obama say? He employed the USS Eisenhower strike carrier group, or carrier strike group, whatever the military calls it, to Syria. So now there's a whole naval armada sitting off of the Syrian coast. The USS Iwo Jima is already there. USS New York is there. There's one other carrier that's there. I can't remember the name of it. Probably about 3,000 Marines are there. So I think the numbers are something like 17 warships and tens of thousands of total military personnel. Obama puts them in Syria while the United Nations at the very previous day said, we can't feed these people here. Did that get any mention by Obama? Not a thing. Instead, he started talking through Hillary Clinton that the Syrian government has chemical weapons they're going to use against their people, or they're going to use against Turkey. So we need to put Patriot missiles in Turkey, and we're going to call that the line in the sand. And you don't hear one peep in the media about, hey, you know what? They said the same thing in Libya. They said the same thing in Iraq. It's the same story. Everybody knows it's a lie, but everybody's keeping quiet about it and just watching what goes on.
Well, the so-called chemical weapons threat that's being hyped about Syria today, Bob, it's the same fabricated stuff that was in 2002 about so-called Iraqi WMDs that turned out to be non-existent, and that made front page headline stories day after day after day, especially in the New York Times. Talked about that a little bit yesterday on the program. And now we've got the same thing repeating again. And, you know, they keep repeating the big lie. They come up with the same kind of stuff instead of Saddam's chemical and biological weapons, whatever they wanted to call them. You've got these so-called chemical weapons that Syria has. Well, lots of countries have chemical weapons. I imagine Syria has chemical weapons. But there's no way in the world Syria would use chemical weapons against its own people. They've kept saying that over and over and over again. And I've quoted their officials, and it's true. It would be suicide for them to use chemical weapons. They certainly won't use them against their own people. And they have a powerful military. As long as they're not fighting NATO, they certainly can do a number on these insurgents that are being imported from foreign countries as proxy mercenaries, mainly for Washington. And this war was planned back in the 1990s. This is Washington's war. If Washington didn't want this war, it would not be happening now. It's a proxy war. But the last two articles I wrote, one that I put out this morning, and one that I wrote this morning that I'll get out tomorrow, it looks almost for certain as though we are getting very, very close to full-scale Western intervention, getting NATO involved, which means bombing, and the idea of putting Patriot missiles to protect Turkey. I mean, people actually believe Turkey needs to be protected. Turkey has the most powerful military in the region. It's got one of the largest, most powerful militaries in the world. Aside from Israel's nuclear and chemical and biological arsenal, it easily can outmatch any military in the region. Certainly, it can outmatch Syria. And Turkey needs to be protected. If anybody needs to be protected, it's Syria. They should put these Patriot missiles on the Syrian side of the border to protect Syria. But the idea is to establish a no-fly zone over certain portions of Syria, the border areas, maybe border areas that are close to big cities, institute no-fly protection over populated areas like Aleppo, the biggest city in the country. It's close to the border up in the northeast, I believe. And also to cover so many kilometers of ground of territory inside Syria, which creates a safe haven for these terror gangs, for these death squads to literally operate freely where they can launch other attacks freely around the country. I mean, this is the stuff that's going on. It's planned and directed by Washington. Other NATO countries are involved, especially Turkey. Britain's involved. France is involved. Regional allies are involved. Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel is involved. That's the real dirty story about this. And the idea isn't the type of governance Bashar Assad has in Syria, other than the fact that he operates independently. He's not a pro-Western stooge, and that's what America wants. It wants all independent governments ousted. It wants pro-Western stooges replacing them. That's what all of these wars are all about. It's nothing less than that. Some of the world's greatest despots, Bob, are Washington's closest allies. Dare I mention the Saudis, the Bahrainis, and I certainly would not leave out the Israelis.
I wouldn't leave out the Egyptians either. I mean,
the Egyptians,
President Morsi is only able to do what he has done in terms of declaring full authority over the legislative, executive, and judicial branch all at once. He can only do that with the United States. And Hillary Clinton even started praising Morsi because of his role in the latest conflict with Israel and Gaza, if you want to call it a conflict instead of a massacre. But and he himself has said, you know, I can't do this without the United States' great support. So there, he's in the back pocket of the United States as well. But a quick note about Syria that you had mentioned, and we can come back to Egypt if you'd like. But the thing that really disturbs me about Syria, that Obama's been involved with this insurgent group or supporting and actually arming and to the teeth, actually, and organizing these groups, is that they're affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And even George W. Bush didn't get involved with groups that were affiliated with Al-Qaeda. When he was going into Iraq, the big thing was, and even though it was hype, at least he made this distinction, we don't want any weapons in the hands of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Obama says nothing about that. But it's undeniable at this point that you've got these elements of Al-Qaeda that are in through and through the insurgency. Jabhat al-Nusra, the Islamist militia group, clearly involved with Al-Qaeda, now has 10,000 fighters on the ground in Syria. The CIA is supporting them. So it's not a matter of a war on terror, even though that's what Obama keeps saying. Terrorism has nothing to do with it, unless you want to talk about what the United States is doing to Syria. Then you can talk about terrorism. But the great quote-unquote terrorist group, which really is not that much anymore, is involved with this insurgency group. So this is going to result in some type of blowback. We saw that blowback in Benghazi already in September. I can't imagine that this isn't going to have some significant blowback as well.
Well, I absolutely agree, Bob. And Washington, certainly under Obama, gets involved with Al-Qaeda. In Libya, it was mostly called the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. But they give themselves different names. There are different strands of them. Some are more extremist, some are less extremist. And, of course, Al-Qaeda came about in the 1980s in Afghanistan. And Al-Qaeda is literally used by Washington as both ally and enemy at different times and occasionally at the same time. There's no question in my mind, Bob, that Obama has exceeded the worst of George Bush. He literally has done things that Bush never would have dared try. That's how bad his administration is. And the worst of it is, lots of people were very angry at Bush, even though they didn't know all the dirty stuff. They were just angry for a lot of general reasons. And Obama literally gets a pass. It's disgusting.
Isn't it? And well, you know what our media is talking about? I read this article this week. I don't even remember where I read it, but the article was complaining about both the American political establishment and the media establishment that for the last several days were just going gaga over the pregnancy of the who is it in England that's pregnant?
I know who you mean, but I forget her name too.
Yeah.
Princess
Kate is her first name, right? Kate somebody Middleton or something.
Yeah, I think it's
the
Kate
Princess
Middleton,
or whatever.
Yeah.
They went. CNN was just going wild on this. I even turned it on after reading the article and just to see if it was true, and it was. They'd rather talk about the royalty, who are basically leeches off of the system. They don't really have any political clout to speak of. They'd rather talk about that than this stuff. I don't get it. It just doesn't add up, except if you fill in the gap that says the media elite along with the union elite are all in bed with the corporate elite, which are in bed with the government. And I think we got to keep coming back to that theme and pointing that out. That's the only explanation for how all these things line up the way they do. And that calls for some type of response from the people. It's got to come back to that. We've got to start pushing back. That's what you're doing. That's what I'm trying to do. We've got to unify the people.
Bob, that's the bottom line. That really is the bottom line. The political system is so corrupt. I've said it. I've repeated it. I've said it over and over again. There is no possibility in the world for reforming the U.S. political system. It's beyond repair. It's beyond repair. Republicans are Democrats. Democrats are Republicans. There's not a dime's worth of difference between them on all the big issues. Absolutely, they are in lockstep. And the only chance to change the system is for ordinary people to realize how badly they're being harmed, they're being scammed, their futures are being stolen, their kids will have no futures at all. And unless we ourselves do something to change this, it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and the kind of incipient tyranny we have today will be full-blown. It's up to us. Either we change it or it'll never change. A quick final word, Bob, because we are plumb out of time.
The first thing I thought when you were talking about that is Obama's attempt to assert unchecked powers that are now before the Supreme Court in the Clapper versus Amnesty International. Can Obama and corporations collect all this information that people engage in on the Internet and through their social media without any type of warrant or any accountability? That's what they're arguing before the Supreme Court. And Scalia has said, let's toss this out because, of course, Obama can do this. The unitary executive theory. That's the next big thing. That's my prediction.
Well, this is tyranny, folks. This is what tyranny looks like. Either we change it or we're stuck with it. Bob, many, many thanks. I look forward to getting you back. I'll shoot you an email when we get off air. Do join us. Join us every week, every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for programs like this, a Truth Hour, for what you most need to know. Tell others about it. Tune in. Stay with PRN. Get the real stuff. Do make it a regular habit.